welcome to another episode of The Right Side. I am Andrea Ruth, and not for the last 2 weeks, so I can't say as always, but I am back, renewed with my co-host, Kimberly Ross. How are you?
I am very glad to be back today, and it's actually been 3 weeks.
Oh, that's right, because we just didn't record that 1 week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you had Carol 1 week, and then you've had guests for the last 2 weeks as well. So yeah, this is my first time back in 3 weeks, and I'm very glad to be back.
Yeah, and I'm glad you're back too, because it was like, for a while there, I was like, do I have different people on, or do I just do it myself, or do I just like go, we're not recording? Because it is one of those things where it's like, we record it at 4 o'clock on Sunday and on the East Coast, and so it is kind of one of those things where it's like, it is Saturday afternoon nap time right now.
So oh, for sure.
It does sure. get to be one of those small things. But Kim, before we jump into things, do you want to talk about where people can find us if they want to subscribe and stuff?
Yes, you should go. You can go to iTunes and look up The Right Side with Andrea and Kim and find us there and subscribe, of course. You can also go to therightside.us. You can subscribe by clicking on the little icon in the top right corner. You can look at past shows and people leave comments there. And so when you do subscribe on iTunes, you should leave a review. And we are definitely worth 5 out of 5 stars. Correct, Andrea?
Absolutely, because that's our favorite.
I think we are.
Too. Mm-hmm. so we had a little bit of a gap, and Kim was gone, and I was, she was off doing things or sick or under the weather, and we're sorry, but kind of not sorry, but I lied. I mean, I didn't lie, but I kind of like smudged the truth.
Correct.
I kind of felt like I was kind of like, going along a little bit with you of what was happening and sad for you and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But do you just want to kind of catch our listeners up on just what the happy and then the sad?
Yes, of course. Well, before I start, I would like to make sure everyone knows how fantastic of a person Andrea Ruth is, because she's not just my co-host and a stellar one at that. And she kind of leads everything, if you've not noticed. I'm horrible at leading, but Andrea is just fantastic at it. But she's not just a great co-host, she's also a good friend. And I'm very happy that she's my friend, and she's very supportive and encouraging. So I just had to get that out there at the start.
Oh, thank you.
But as Andrea said, she is correct. I haven't really been going off and like doing things or really been like quote under the weather with like the flu or anything. And today's topic is about what I'm about to share. But if you followed me on Twitter, I think, I said something about it 2 days ago. But today's topic is actually going to be about miscarriage and pregnancy loss. And the reason for that is because I experienced a miscarriage a few weeks ago. And since then, I've been dealing with some of the physical side effects. That's over now. But of course, the emotional repercussions and all that are still occurring, of course, and will continue for a while, I believe, maybe probably always. But, just dealing with the emotional aspects of it. But I really wanted to talk about it today because I think it's an important topic that is not discussed very often. And I think since we have a podcast and we talk about, we talk a lot about politics and cultural things and stuff, we also talk a lot about the pro-life issue. I think that this is just as much of a pro-life issue as talking about just full-term pregnancy or abortion or birth control or other things like that. So yeah, wanted to use the opportunity to talk about it today. And we've talked about this before we got on the air, that I may get emotional during it, but I do want to be pretty transparent and honest, because it's something that happens to a lot of women, and people either shy away from talking about it, or they don't know how to relate to a woman who's gone through it. They don't know what to say. So Andrew's kind enough to say that this is totally fine to have as a topic today. So that's what we're going to do.
Yeah. So, this is one of those things where I kind of like sat there and was kind of, it's something that so many women have dealt with. And I it's one of those things that when you haven't experienced it, and you said the stat on, isn't it like 1 in 4 women experience it?
Yes.
Sometimes you don't even know that you're pregnant until you're suddenly having a miscarriage, and then you're like, so some women don't have the experience of kind of knowing that they're pregnant first, but then there's some women that absolutely do know that it's kind of one of these things that uniquely can only happen to women. But at the same time, not every woman experiences it. So even for someone, it's like we were going to talk about like, well, why don't more women talk about it? And I think, there's also, for every 1 in 4 women who experience it and we, as women, we all want to be there for each other. And even men, we want to be supportive and things like that. I think that it is something. And I know that coming at this from a different type of quote unquote loss thing, like losing limbs and things like that, even though it's not the same, there's a loss there, and it's something that people can't really, that they don't feel like, okay, well, I can't sit there other than empathize or sympathize. I can't empathize. And so it kind of gets a little bit, at least this is my thought of why it doesn't get talked about more when it's something that's so common. So
yes.
Why do you think that, where do you want to start with this, I guess, Kim? Do you want to start with why you think it doesn't get talked about? And just like, is it hard? Has it been hard for you to open up about it? Or do you think it will be something that you're like very well prepared for at this point, or will be someday?
Yeah. Well, I kind of want to give a little bit of the background and the story. And don't worry, I'm not going to go into the most extreme details ever. But I mean, I do want to be like transparent and open and honest about it. But I think that's a great point you make about like losing limbs and losing a child through miscarriage. Not all of us experience all of those things. And it's sometimes difficult to know how to talk to someone about that who's experienced it. But I think a lot of times people are just looking for empathy or just someone, to listen. You don't even have to have any grand reason for why it happened or some amazing, like, here's the most encouraging quote I can find thing. You can just, listen. And I think that goes for, your experience in your life and mine and so many other people who've gone through things.
And I'm not trying to compete with
I'm just saying, but we've all gone through things that other people haven't. Right. And it's okay to say, hey, I hear you. I can't do much for you, but I'm here. So I think that's what a lot of people want when they go through difficulties. But as far as my miscarriage, my husband and I have a toddler son. He's almost 3 years old. And he's fantastic and joyful and wonderful and everything. And that pregnancy went completely fine. There was no reason to think there was ever any problem. And he came into the world and he's just, the light of our lives and everything. And so in February, I found out I was pregnant. And of course, we wanted to add a second kid to our family. So excited about that, of course. And this is actually an aspect I'll talk about later, because it's the first trimester, a lot of women don't feel either they should tell many other people or anyone, or don't feel that they can because of something might happen, like, what do we do? So we decided to tell, most of our family and then some of our really close friends. And I told Andrea, not least of all, because more than once I was like, Andrea, I cannot record today because I'm having the most nauseous afternoon of my life. And I don't want to sound like I'm getting sick on the air. And she being, again, the wonderful person I mentioned earlier, she has been totally fine, I think twice in the past few months, for allowing me to not join her for a podcast session because I was sick, like literally sick with morning sickness, afternoon sickness, evening sickness, whatever you want to call it. So I appreciate that from her. So I obviously had like the normal symptoms and everything. And things were going fine. And I had actually a first appointment that was going to be almost toward the end of my first trimester. And a few weeks before that, I started having some complications. And I'm not going to get into that because I don't want to bother people or gross them out or anything. But there were questions in my mind about, what's going on. I'm concerned about what's happening. Let's keep an eye on it. We'll see what happens. So I, of course, called my doctor and she told me not to worry, just to keep an eye on things. And it kept getting worse, my issues, the complications, whatever you want to call them. So they increased so much that the day before my scheduled first appointment, I actually had kind of an emergency appointment and went into the doctor. And they did an ultrasound and everything, and they confirmed that it did look like I had lost the baby. And this, of course, was, I guess it wasn't completely shocking to me because of what had been happening the past 10 days, 2 weeks or something. But it's devastating because in my mind and on my calendar, my actual calendar, I knew that there was a certain day that I was going to get the first ultrasound picture of our child. I was going to be able to put that on the fridge. I was going to take a screenshot of it and send it along to grandparents and aunts and uncles. So exciting. I mean, it's just if, for anyone who's been there. And I know Andrea, I mean, Andrea's a mom, she's a daughter. Like, you're so excited. Like that first picture, it's kind of, you feel like you can breathe a little bit because of the first trimester's nearing completion.
Yeah.
You can move on. You can really start planning and everything. Yeah. But the day before that was supposed to happen for me, I was getting the news that I had probably lost the baby. And then I was told by my OBGYN to confirm everything to make sure it was a complete miscarriage and to make sure, you know, we know how things are. I had to come back in 2 weeks to get another ultrasound and confirm. So after that first appointment, we were hopeful that there was still a chance that we could, you know, see a strong heartbeat and things would be fine, that this was just a fluke, that honestly the baby was hiding.
Like a loss of a twin or something.
Right, yeah. That there was like the baby was hiding behind something, which they say happens and you can't always get a good ultrasound picture the first time. So I was hopeful that there was a slim chance that something, you know, could, it would just be a fluke and things would be great. Well, in the week to 10 days following the first appointment, I had the miscarriage. In other words, my body actually expelled the pregnancy, for lack of a better term. And I went through a lot of, I would say, more pain than the initial labor pains that I experienced with my first son. And there's, to be frank, there's a lot of tissue loss and blood loss. And it was such an emotionally painful and physically painful week to 10 days that as I was experiencing it in the midst of it, and I mean, Andrea knew, I told her, you know, what was happening, and other people who had known about the pregnancy, they knew what was happening. You know, people were praying for us and everything. As I was experiencing it, one day in the afternoon in pain, I looked up on my phone articles about miscarriage because I knew what was happening. Mm-hmm. And I looked up, you know, support groups or articles or, you know, just kind of what to expect. I just kind of wanted something to grasp a hold of, to realize that other women have been there. This is exactly what they went through. And you know what? They came out the other end and they're fine. Not so much physically, because you know you're going to be fine physically, but just, you know, mentally and emotionally. And I could hardly find anything. I found a few articles, like there's an article in The Independent. There's a few other things, but mostly people really talk about miscarriage. If they don't share about it fully, it's very like sterilized. The definitions of miscarriage is a loss of a baby. Here's what happens. Here's the different types of miscarriage. Here's what you have to do after miscarriage. And I realized actually in that moment, I was like, you know what? I'm going to talk about this and write about this because I think it's so important for women to not feel alone. Because up to one in four women experience the same thing I did. Obviously different circumstances. They might have multiple miscarriages. They might have had a miscarriage later in their pregnancy. They might not have had a child before their first miscarriage. So I really, really knew in that moment, like being scared and sad, that I wanted to write about it because I think it's so important. And I hope to encourage people by talking about it, because it's not the easiest thing to discuss, but it's something I think we should. So again, fast forwarding a little bit, I went to my second appointment and my doctor confirmed that I had a miscarriage, and that the small silver lining was that I had had a full miscarriage, meaning I did not have to have any sort of surgery, which usually in case of a miscarriage is called a DNC. They dilate and then essentially they remove everything from your uterus. And I didn't have to have any sort of taking a pill or anything. Right. Because as you know, when a miscarriage, if there's an incomplete miscarriage, it can cause an infection and the woman, you know, can suffer from that as well. So the silver lining was that my body did what it was supposed to. As hard as that sounds, it did what it was supposed to, and I didn't have to have anything done further. So now we're a full week out of that last ultrasound appointment. And like I said, I want to talk about it because it's difficult, but it needs to be discussed. So that's what we're going to discuss today. And when I put this on Twitter a few days ago, and I've shared, you know, with family and friends as well, it was amazing to me how many people said, you know what, we had a miscarriage. You know what, we had two miscarriages and we have three grown boys now. You know what, we had this, we had that. So many people have experienced it. And so many people either don't know how to talk about it or don't want to talk about it. And I think either of those decisions to not talk about it, I think it's completely fine because not everyone, you shouldn't, you know, pressure someone into talking about it because it is a loss. If they don't want to talk about it, that's fine. If they don't know how to talk about it, that's fine. If they do want to talk about it, that's fine. I think in, like we were saying earlier, in so many kinds of loss, there's no guidebook, there's no playbook for how we should discuss it or how we should experience our grief or mourn or something. So that's the story. And that's what I wanted to talk about today. So
yeah, I mean, it is one of those things. I mean, I can just not to, I mean, I'm kind of like, and I will just say this, is that I am a little bit, I'm kind of hoping that you'll, you know, kind of say like, Andrew, this is kind of what I want to talk about. I will say that, you know, you and I are almost the same age. I mean, we're what, six months between us. You're
yes,
in June.
Old.
Yeah. Yeah. But we're both going to be turning 37 this year, me at the end of the year, but you coming up in a few months. And when you were talking about it on, you know, on Instagram and Facebook and sharing it, that our age does kind of make, and I make you a little bit concerned. And I did say to my fiance, I was like, you know, when we first got engaged, I was like, I think I might want a kid. But then within a couple of days, because he's older, he'll be 50 next year. It was kind of one of those things that almost immediately went away. I was like, okay, that maybe possible want is gone. But I was sitting there, and after my car accident, and not to equate any of this to you, but after my car accident, I was basically told, you still have a uterus, but when someone goes through such a trauma that you've gone through, the chances of you having a successful pregnancy in the future is almost none. And then yes, I do have a daughter, but I was telling Jade, I was like, I can't imagine being in your shoes in getting older, where, you know, what do they call it? Like geriatric pregnancy or something like that at our age. And just being kind of like being in the situation of wanting to add to our family, starting older, and then, you know, having these things happen. And basically, that was a little bit where I was kind of feeling this total, I guess, separation in kind of like time of life kind of things, you know, like, wow, Kim and I are the same age, but yet, you know, I have a 10-year-old and won't be having any more kids, but she's still very much wanting to add to her family. And so I don't want to like you to start getting like, you know, like, I don't want to hear about you that, but the upsetting part of that, I just wanted you to kind of like talk a little bit about like how does that kind of alter your perception of how do we move straight to kind of like, you know, just being in a place where if it's just our son, then it's fine, but we'll keep on trying and these kinds of things. And I'm only asking this, and I'm going to keep on like droning on, and I probably sound so stupid,
no.
But one of my younger sister has lived with a couple. Well, she had a bad housing issue happen in Seattle. She ended up moving back into where a woman that she used to house with in her house. And then when she got married like 7-8 years ago, she moved out. But then when this thing happened like 3 years ago, she moved back in and they have a son. And she had their son when she got married when she was 40, had their son when she was 41. And then I think three subsequent miscarriages. And then her husband didn't want to adopt. And so I was just kind of thinking like, how quickly at our age is it, you know, kind of, because I'm sure, Kim, I am making such a like hash of this because I'm sitting here thinking like, oh, I should have asked this
it's
other
not
question
true. You're
before.
Doing fine.
Okay. But I'm just kind of wondering, and maybe, and I'm probably doing this flip flop because I guess, you know, I guess I kind of want to hear like how you think of this in terms of, do you take a while to kind of like cope, or do you just get back on the wagon and say, okay, we try again? Cause, or do you go to fertility, you know, is there fertility type, you know, questions that you then go to a doctor? And I don't want you to get super personal, but just as a general thing, like, I'm just thinking, like I said, for me kind of thinking this through, like what would I do? And I don't know where you go from this. And I know we're talking about pregnancy loss, and I'm moving straight to, okay, well, now what do you do? Because I just want you to have, I want you to be happy. And I'm just like, I'm like, okay, well, we got to have a baby kind of thing. So
no, I think those are good questions. And I don't think you should feel bad about asking those questions. Those are fine questions. But I forget the specific term, but essentially you're considered an older pregnant woman from the age of 35 on. Mm-hmm. Actually, people might laugh at that, but no, they actually think you're kind of the old pregnant woman if you are pregnant from the age of 35 on. So I didn't quite fall into that category with my son, but definitely now, because I'm almost 37, I do fall into that category. But of course, women who are older have had healthy pregnancies and everything. But as far as the rate of miscarriage when you get older, there's actually, it starts increasing at the age of 37. And then at the age of 40, it dramatically increases the risk of miscarriage. Also the risk of Down syndrome that mm-hmm. increases, and other, you know, disabilities and difficulties, those have a sharp rise. And then I actually found a stat that says by the age of 45, less than 20% of all recognized pregnancies are viable. So clearly, if you're into your 40s, definitely, I'm not like being disparaging of anyone who has a pregnancy in their 40s, but the rate of miscarriage goes up then, the rate of Down syndrome goes up, and so do a host of other issues as well. But as far as, you know, quote, getting back on the wagon after having a miscarriage, obviously that's something that every couple needs to decide. And for us, we've actually talked about how if it's just our son, then it's just our son. And we have no interest in me being pregnant when I'm in my 40s because of the health complications mm-hmm. for possibly myself and the unborn child.
Breast cancer goes way up in your 40s, right?
Yeah. But if in the next few years, if we do get pregnant, that's great. And we also know that it may not happen. And for us, and I know it's different for some people, for us, we're not really interested in like seeking the fertility treatments or all that mm-hmm. just because of the costs and the time and the pain and all that's involved.
And you've mentioned before, I think maybe in a previous iteration of the podcast, that hormonal birth control kind of like messed with you. So you wouldn't want to necessarily jump on that wagon when you have a history of dealing with hormones. And
no, I don't like hormonal birth control. Yeah. I think plenty of other people have said that too. I don't know how you feel about it.
Oh, I hate it.
Personally, I hate it.
Yeah.
It caused actually plenty of problems in my late 20s and like when I was 30. And it's not for me. Some people it is for, but I don't enjoy that sort of thing. And I think it actually can wreak havoc on your body, and it did a little bit on mine. So I'm not going down that route.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. But as far as the stats about miscarriage, I want to pull those up too. And we said, obviously, one in four women at most experience that. Essentially, about 10 to 15 in every 100 pregnancies actually ends in miscarriage. And most miscarriages happen, I'm sure everyone knows this, in the first trimester, the first 12 weeks of pregnancy. Of course, you know, difficulties can happen later on in the pregnancy. And I'm not at all, if anyone's listening to this, I'm not equating my experience to anyone else's. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that having a stillbirth is like having a miscarriage in the first trimester. I can't imagine the heartache of burying a child, a little baby, you know, in a little coffin. You've carried them the whole pregnancy, and then there's a stillbirth at the end. I've actually had some friends deal with stillbirth. I've had friends have miscarriages, ectopic pregnancies, all that. I'm not equating what I've experienced any of that. But I am saying that dealing with a miscarriage, when you have you see the physical changes, you start growing a little baby belly, you're nauseous, as Andrea knew I was when I was like, hey, Andrea, I can't podcast because I'm totally nauseous. but you go through all these things and physical changes, you go through the hope and expectation of welcoming in a new child into your family. And honestly, you see the pregnancy tests that you've taken, the ones I took for this pregnancy, I still have them on my bathroom counter. I can't part with them. And I know that may sound weird, but it's like, I think the worst thing about pregnancy in the first trimester is you have a loss and you have nothing to show for it. I don't have a picture of my unborn baby, because I do believe that life begins at conception. I don't have a picture of that. I don't have anything tangible other than I was pregnant a few weeks ago and now I'm not. Mm-hmm. And it's not easy. And it's hard to explain to people like the feelings behind it, because someone might try to, you know, downplay what you're feeling because at least it didn't get to like month 6 or 7. And I know, and I'm thankful for that, but it also doesn't make, you know, the pain any less just because it, you know, it didn't, the pregnancy wasn't viable for longer or something. But it's the, you have a loss and you have nothing to show for it. It's different than other losses. And it's hard. People can't really tell when they meet you or talk to you. You can't explain to them that you lost this family member that you've known for X number of decades and all these memories you have. No, it's mostly there's nothing to show for it. And it's the expectation and hope that you had with the pregnancy. And even I was saying the other day, my due date was going to be in October. And just little things like I'll think throughout the day, oh, I should get this ready before the baby comes. And then I have to remind myself that's not happening any longer. Mm-hmm. Or I need to move this around from the room that's going to be the baby's nursery elsewhere. Well, that's not happening any longer. Or I'll hear a name. Like I heard a name the other day that I loved. And I was like, hey, I should put that on the list of baby names. Mm-hmm. But I don't need to right now. And I think it will get easier for sure. I know it will get easier for sure. But it's okay. I'm trying to learn that it's okay to be okay with grief and deal with it. And it's okay to cry. And I told Andrea, I promised mostly that I wouldn't on the podcast.
I was sitting here going like, how do I was like, Kim's worrying about crying. How do I not cry?
but it's okay. I would say it's okay to breathe through the grief. It's okay to have the grief. It's okay because other women experience it. And someone said to me, I think it was on Twitter, that it's a club that so many women belong to that none of us want the member, and the membership dues are pretty pricey. Mm-hmm. Like we're all like in this group together and we all have different stories behind it and we don't want to be there, but we're all here. And I do want to emphasize that it's through no fault of our own, because miscarriage isn't a choice to end the life of your child. It's your body somehow, for some reason, the pregnancy ends. And as my doctor told me, a lot of times it's because of chromosomal abnormalities. And for whatever reason, it just doesn't continue.
Yeah. You know, I remember my great aunt telling my cousin, her daughter, I mean, this was almost probably close to 20 years ago at this point. Yeah, no, her daughter, this was before she had her first daughter. So this was 1997, I guess. And my great aunt told my cousin, she was like, you never know if maybe, you know, and not that you would have, you know, if the baby had been brought to term and there was something different about it, you know, different about your child at that point, like that you wouldn't love it just, but you never know what that maybe, you know, maybe the baby wasn't, you know, couldn't develop past that, you know, just like, right. Think, like you never know. But again, it doesn't help with the grief that you feel and what you're going to. And it's kind of it's a difficult reminder that, you know, I remember hearing I think it was Alison Rosen, who actually, you know, she used to be Adam Carolla's sidekick, who got married late in her late 30s. And then, you know, they started the process of trying to get pregnant. And I remember her saying on a podcast one time that she goes, you spend your entire 20s you spend so much of your life as a woman trying not to get pregnant that you think it's just going to be a breeze when when you're finally ready. You're just going to be like, okay, I spent all my 20s and half my 30s avoiding getting pregnant, you know, and making, you know, doing all these, you know, either keeping track of your cycle or being on hormonal birth control or any type of thing, you know. And then you get to the point where you're married, you're settled down, you're ready to have a start a family, and then it's like, haha, you know, like not haha, yes. But it feels like kind of like a sick joke, you know, like, oh, yeah. It's not that easy anymore, you know.
I think that's such a great point, because I mean, we felt like that. I was like, okay, I for sure don't want to get pregnant when my husband's finishing up school. And I for sure, we want to do some traveling first, like all this stuff. And I'm not saying that you can't do those things. Please no one think that. But yeah, you think that here's how my life is going to go. I'm going to plan this out. And then here's when I'm going to have my kids and everything. And you get to that point and it may not go according to plan. Mm-hmm. And let's be honest, there's a short window for when women can pretty successfully carry a pregnancy, and it doesn't last forever. And when you're 22, you might not want to be a mom, but when you're 37, you realize the clock is ticking, and there's a lot of choices you have to make personally about what you want to do. But I think the idea that, oh, for sure, when I want to get pregnant, that's definitely going to happen, and it's definitely going to be a breeze. It isn't. It really isn't.
It does make you wonder, as kind of a side thought that I'm having now, it does make you kind of wonder if the statistics for miscarriage will go up as millennials aren't having kids until their mid-30s. Like, those
numbers are based on,
you know, kind of past generations, because you have to kind of wait until people age out. You know, do you think, in a way, just as a side thought, and because I know you want to talk about, you know, and we've kind of been talking about the stigma a little bit, but to kind of do you think that maybe Hollywood, in a way, and not even Hollywood, but like news media, like Megyn Kelly had 3 kids after the age of like 38. Do you think that maybe like we see on TV, like these older people? I mean, I think, who was it? Janet Jackson had a child when she was almost 50. And so we see these kind of like older people, like, oh, you can have kids very late. But it's kind of something that's, it's almost, now, not that there's not, I mean, as you get older, the instances that, you know, the numbers go up and are less favorable. And not that these, you know, I have no idea if, I have no idea if Megyn Kelly was on fertility. I mean, she was just one of those women that could do that. I mean, I know someone that had a perfectly fine pregnancy after having her tubes tied and being in her mid 40s, had a successful pregnancy without hormones, and had a, you know, now the kid's like 23 or something like that. I mean,
wow. So,
yeah. I mean, those are some weird instances, you know, like it's kind of like the fluke thing though, right? Like that's not the normal. That's not what you're, but do you think that there's kind of like this image of, oh, well, we can, and I'm not saying that you and your husband made any type of, I mean, that was, you guys just made choices for your guys' lives. And yeah, it wasn't that they were wrong decisions, because you never know what would have happened, you know, 10 years earlier if you had kids right away. But but do you think that there's kind of like this idea that this window is gonna last until I'm ready to have kids?
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think you're right when it comes to like people in the media and celebrities. Who was it? Savannah Guthrie, I think, on NBC News, she just had another baby, but she's in her 40s.
Yeah.
And there's some actresses I've seen recently who've done that. Megyn Kelly, Janet Jackson, all those people. Yeah, I think there's this idea that, first of all, that there will never be an issue when it comes to your ability to have kids whenever you choose to have them. And also, there's so many things to do and so many goals to meet in your 20s and early 30s that actually putting kids on the back burner is preferable. Now, again, everyone has their own decisions to make, and no one's life looks like, you know, anyone else's. But I do think there's this kind of idea that with the amount of like birth control that we have right now and the use of birth control, it's because we want to push kids off until later. The medical developments, scientific developments will allow us to have kids when we want them if there's some issue, and that, you know, education and traveling and other pursuits are more important. Now, if I could rewind time and go back to when I got married, which was in my mid-20s, thinking now about children and everything, I would probably want to have 3 or 4 kids, honestly. But at that time, we didn't think the children thing was going to happen then. We actually wanted to wait a little bit longer. And, you know, here we are now. We have a wonderful son. And if that's the only children, you know, we have, that's completely fine. But if we could talk to our younger selves, and I don't know if other people feel like this too, would we have more? We probably would. And we would have had to make some different choices back then. And I'm not putting down anyone's choices. I'm not even really putting down our choices, because, I mean, we made the ones that we thought were best at the time. But yeah, I do think there's this idea that just because you want them, it's going to happen then. And kind of the, and I hate to bring politics into this, but kind of the feminist idea that education and travel and fun are more important than family is I think tearing a little bit away at the, you know, pregnancy rate in America, because we know it's going down. There's fewer babies being born. I mean, and that's not just America, it's elsewhere in the world as well. But I did want to bring up two articles I just saw in the media, like in the last week and a half. Mm-hmm. Two different media personalities, one I really have never heard of before, but another one I've heard of, who also experienced miscarriages recently. Hillary Baldwin, you know, she's Alec Baldwin's wife. I think they have 4 kids currently, and she's about mid-30s as well, early 30s or something. But she also just had a miscarriage. And the article is about her actually opening up about her miscarriage. And she said, in coping with loss or a difficult time, it's important to be present for your emotions in the process, but also keep an eye on perspective and joyful moments. And I think, honestly, she's obviously a celebrity and she has a bigger platform than any of us do. But she's opening up about her miscarriage because there is kind of a stigma about it. And I was glad I saw that because I'm dealing with that and other women are too. And then there is this woman named Annie Smith. Now she's in her early 20s and she's actually the fiance of a rapper who I've never heard of and whose name I don't think I can pronounce.
No, I never heard of him either. He's apparently like a Spotify or something like that rapper, which I guess they like have their own.
I am not that cool to know any of this stuff.
Yeah, I read the story.
Yeah, but I mean, she just had a miscarriage as well, and she's younger than me, and she's younger than Hillary Baldwin. Mm-hmm. But she talked about the loss as well on social media. But as far as the stigma kind of surrounding it, I'd love to hear, Andrea, what you think as someone who's, you know, observing, you know, what I've gone through, and I'm sure some of your friends and family have gone through as well. Do you think there's a stigma around miscarriage, and why do you think that is? Because I have my own ideas on it, but I'd love to hear yours.
If I had to sit back and think about it, I mean, I think it's one of those things where it's, we know what happens and there's nothing shameful about it. It's not something that a mother chooses or wants, and it's just something that happens. I think, I'm not sure that there, I think maybe the stigma, if I had a miscarriage or something, and if people were telling me, well, you know, and doctors and everybody trying to make you feel better saying, well, you know, 1 in 4 women has a miscarriage. It would, and if people, like you said, like, you know, sitting there thinking about, oh, well, this person had a stillbirth, and, you know, you kind of, I think women naturally kind of say, well, I'm not, you know, like maybe this is something that, you know, because it happens to so many people, am I just like a quote unquote hysterical woman who can't get over things? Mm-hmm. And am I being too girl-like by blowing this up in, you know, into something? I mean, that would be my thoughts just because I think that way. So I have no idea what you think, but that would be, but I don't project that onto other people. I think that that's what we as women who generally go through things feel, and not that other people feel that way, but we kind of project what, you know, our own, I mean, and you're dealing with something internally. Mm-hmm. So I would say that kind of goes with that, along with a lot of things that happen internally. We just kind of are like, well, are we supposed to, is it like a stiff upper lip type thing? Are we just supposed to shut up about it? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a really good point. Because like I was saying earlier, you don't have anything to show for the loss. And at least it's not a stillbirth. At least it's not a this. At least it's not a that. And I understand that the degrees of grief and heartache would increase if I had held a baby in my hands, you know, who died moments after birth. I definitely believe that's harder. But the fact that, you know, you experience something and it's a very internal, personal thing, mm-hmm. and you don't have anything to show for it. Yeah, I will be honest. There's been a few times, especially after I tweeted that we would be talking about this today. I was like, well, I hope people don't think that I'm going through something that's bigger than what anyone else has ever gone through. And I had to kind of, you know, catch myself and say, you know what? No, it's okay. We can talk about it. you're dealing with grief, and other people deal with grief as well. And it's okay to discuss the different types of grief that we experience. And this is the one I'm currently going through. But I do think there's this, oh my gosh, is this me being hysterical? Because honestly, with pregnancy, you have a lot of hormones and things are raging. And also with pregnancy loss and miscarriage, your body, it just goes through a lot. I mean, even after the loss of the child, your body and the hormones are just, it's crazy and you're all over the place. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was trying to explain this the other day to a friend. She asked me how I was doing and I said, I'll feel fine. And then something will like set me off and I'll think about what could have been, that sort of thing. And that you kind of, you know, hold everything under like this thin layer of normalcy because you realize that there's a loss there, but it's nothing you're going to like really, everyone you meet, you're not going to be like, hey, this is what I experienced and I want you to feel, you know, sorry for me. But there is this feeling that, am I taking it, like, am I being too open with it or something, or too hysterical about it or something? But,
which is weird.
I mean, I think it's okay to talk about. But also, just with, like, the stigma surrounding it, I think there's still a lot of people who think if they have had a miscarriage or if, you know, the husband's, you know, dealing with the situation as well, that they've done something wrong and that they caused the miscarriage. And I mean, if you hear from doctors, my doctor said this as well, there's no way you caused the miscarriage. Obviously, mm-hmm. if you're, you know, doing what you should and, you know, just following just the normal procedures that you would with any pregnancy, you didn't cause a miscarriage. It's not because you ate this thing that caused a miscarriage. And she even said, you know, if you would have been in like a slight little car accident, that's, you know, that's not what caused a miscarriage. And I wasn't, by the way. But to...
Yeah, the babies are protected so well. Right. It was in your body, yeah.
Right. And so thinking yourself too hysterical, I think, is a reason women don't talk about it. Thinking you caused the problem, I think, is the reason women don't talk about it. And another friend I was talking to, her mom had a miscarriage in the 70s. And at that time, I guess people even, I mean, talked about it even less, but there was kind of some like family reaction to it that, well, we have to kind of be quiet about it because certainly the mother caused the miscarriage. But I mean, that's not true at all. Mm-hmm. But I did want to make this like huge point today about, you know, miscarriage and everything. I think the best thing we can do is people in our life who have experienced miscarriages, if they don't want to talk about it, like I said earlier, that's fine. People don't have to feel like they have to talk about everything. If they do want to talk about it, that's also okay. And the best thing I think people can do in the situation is just be there to listen. You don't have to offer any sage, you know, advice or anything. Just be there as, you know, kind of a sounding board, because we just kind of want to explain how we're feeling, because it's tough because you don't have anything to show for the loss, but it is a loss and you need to be able to grieve through it.
Yeah. And I think that for like anyone in the opposite position, cause I'll just say like, you know, like you and I had a few conversations like while this was, well, especially during the, when it was first happening and stuff like that. And I know that for me, like I would like try and be like, and I know that people get, you know, some people are just really uncomfortable hearing about it. And it's like, look, or feeling like they, you know, shouldn't like, oh, well, this person doesn't want to hear from me. It's like, I kind of gave you my kind of standard, not standard answer, but something that really like real that I like had to come to like really had to remember things that everything works out the way that they're supposed to, as hard as mm-hmm. they can be. And so it's like, and then I was, you know, I was telling Jay, I was like, I feel really stupid. Like, you know, like Kim's going through something really hard and I'm coming, you know, at her with stuff that, you know, I talked to myself about, you know, for years after, you know, I had something stupid like a car accident, you know, it was one of those things. And so I think that for people in the kind of the listening position, and having been through a lot of, you know, therapy and stuff like that for, you know, stuff in my life, that it also doesn't, if someone doesn't want to talk about something, they generally won't talk about it. But so if you're on the listening end of hearing someone talk about loss or grief or just like, just realize that if they're talking to you about something, that generally means that they would appreciate a reaction or a response, because then I know from experience, and I don't know if you felt like this, but yeah. which you shouldn't have, but you think like, oh God, did I just overshare? You know? So I would just suggest to anyone, if someone comes to you and starts talking to you about anything that's, you know, a hard thing to kind of talk about, or something that people just want, you know, some sympathy for, just know that everybody kind of feels awkward in the situation. And everybody worries about being an overshare or, you know, talking about things too much. And I don't know why that is, but I think that's one of those other things that comes through, you know, just dealing with stuff in life, that you kind of realize, like, you know, if someone's talking to you about it, it means that they value, you know, kind of like your thought and opinion, and kind of want to have an exchange. And sometimes you should just be an ear, but at the same time, it's like, usually people are telling you something so that you can then have a kind of conversation about it, you know, on some level.
No, so. you were very encouraging, and other people who, you know, listened were very encouraging, and you sharing the, you know, everything happens for a reason thing, that was very encouraging, because there's sometimes it's hard to see the silver lining in things that happen to us. And you, with all you've gone through and seeing where you are now, and you guys, she's fantastic, Andrea. She really is a wonderful person. But you encouraging me through that, a different kind of loss, it doesn't mean that you still can't apply the same lesson from it.
Right.
So I totally appreciated that. Yeah. And yeah, I think you're absolutely right. If someone's talking to you, they're probably okay with sharing it with you. And sure, it may be awkward a few times, but it's okay to, it's okay to discuss it, because especially for me, if there's a lot of like grief or pain, I have to share it with like close friends. I have to talk about it, because keeping it bottled in just does not do me any good. There's just, it can, you know, leads to depression and other things like that. And that does not need to happen.
So that was the other.
And when you can have like therapeutic moments with, you know, friends and family and talk about things, it's just a healthier situation for everybody.
So that was the other kind of like side topic that kind of like came to me while I was sitting here, because you've mentioned this on the podcast in the past. So I don't think I'm like, you know, bringing up things that you don't want out in the public. But having been through postpartum depression, like, is that correlating in any way? And are you kind of like feeling, is it at all the same, or is it not? Like, I mean, you don't have like the, hey, I do have this bundle of joy and I'm supposed to be happy guilt mm-hmm. that you've talked about in the past, but yeah. you have this kind of like loss that's kind of internal, and you don't have it, and people are, you know, and like I said, like, you know, we as women kind of think like, okay, I shouldn't be, you know, like, should I not be, you know, affected as deeply as I am feeling right now? Like, how is the postpartum depression kind of meeting with, you know, miscarriage, bum, you know, I don't know if you're depressed, because depression is a very clinical term, so, but like mm-hmm. kind of sadness or bummed out kind of thing, you know, to be.
Yeah, I think, no, that's a really good question. I was actually thinking about that, you know, during this whole experience. The postpartum depression was, I am not minimizing anything else that, you know, people who have miscarriages go through. But for me, postpartum depression was more of a, like a true kind of depression. I don't know really any other way to describe it, but what I've gone through in the last few weeks is definitely a grief and a sadness, but it is quite honestly like losing someone, because even though I never met my child, there was a loss of a life, and it going through that grief stage you do when you lose someone, that's what I feel like I'm going through right now. And mm-hmm. it is definitely, like I said, hard, because you have nothing to show for the loss, but I do feel like it's a grief process, mourning the loss of someone. As far as postpartum depression, I actually found that to be more, lack of a better term, dark and difficult, in terms of the, you know, the chemical imbalance and everything that happens with postpartum depression, and the experience of holding your child and not really being quite interested in being a mother at that moment. It's a mix of a lot of guilt along with whatever, you know, chemical imbalance is happening. And with postpartum depression, I'll just be very blunt and honest. There are plenty of days when I experience that, and I had that for probably a year and a half or so, plenty of days when I thought that the best thing for my husband and my son would be if I didn't wake up the next day. Mm-hmm. Now, I wasn't suicidal. I wasn't looking for any escape or anything, but I just thought it would just be better for them if I wasn't around. And just the idea of going through another day, feeling that like shadow and that darkness and everything, that didn't appeal to me. And I don't feel like that now. I don't not want to wake up in the mornings, but you just know that there's going to be that like ache inside of you because mm-hmm. of the loss you had. And the fact that it's a guilt because you feel like a little bit like your body betrayed you, and that what your body's supposed to do as a woman didn't pan out this time. So I will say it's less dark than postpartum depression, and it's more of like the grief and sadness following the loss of someone in your life. And it's that sort of process. And I know that there will be an end, in other words, an end to that process that feels a little bit easier. But no, I don't think it's as much of a turmoil as postpartum depression. And right. I hope that doesn't sound like I'm, you know, making light of anything.
No, I mean, I didn't go through either. So it's one of those things, again, it's like we're both women here. And, you know, we have a lot of conversations like, oh, your experience as a woman is just like mine as a woman because we're both women. It's like, no. On a fundamental level, like Kim and I are both, you know, writers, podcasters, educated, you know, born the same year, et cetera, et cetera. Like supposedly we have had very similar life trajectories in a way, but then there's these very big things like, you know, like postpartum depression and then miscarriage that you've experienced. And then, you know, it's like, again, not equating it, not a similar thing, but another, like I've lost two limbs, you know, like it's like, and you haven't, you know, it's like, and there's those types of, you know, kind of like, and of course, when I'm talking about losing two limbs, I mean, I only bring that up in this conversation in the context because one, it is a loss, and two, it completely changes your life. And completely. That's all I don't want people getting upset with me that I talked about, like, I'm just trying to, as you're supposed to do when you discuss, and I'm not explaining this to you, Kim, but I'm just saying that, like, the only reason why is because when you're talking with someone and discussing things with them, you try to empathize and find ways that your experience is similar, you know, and the things that you've been through and stuff like that. And so again, I hope people don't get, if anybody is listening at this point, please don't get mad at me for just totally ham-fisting this interview because
it's been. I don't think they would. Yeah, and if they do, then they shouldn't. So.
But it's like, yeah, no, trust me. We had, like, Kim had to come up with her, you know, things of, I'm going to try not to cry. And I had to tell her, I'm going to, you know, if I end up cracking a joke or something like that, she has to forgive me because my way of dealing with feeling sad or awkward or anything like that is to kind of make a dark joke about things, and I've made it this whole time, not, and one hasn't even popped in my head. That's how good.
And I've mostly been pretty good with the. I mean, there was a few moments where I felt like crying, but I'm not. I didn't get there.
I know. You powered through, and this was not a fun, easy, you know, discussion. I do. Lastly, I mean, I'm sure that, you know, your husband and your son have been joys, and you've talked about you know, friends and family being very supportive. But do you want to give a shout out to Henry at all?
I do. I have this wonderful cat named Henry. And I'm not lying when I say this, but I think, and people may find this ridiculous, but I think animals can sense when their owners are feeling sad or something, because, and I know people might laugh at this, but my cat has been very like following me around all the time and cuddling up next to me and snuggling next to me. And that is a kind of therapy as well. Mm-hmm. So I love that. But also just like in general, just like wrapping things up, if you've experienced postpartum depression, there's nothing wrong with getting help for it. If you've experienced a miscarriage and you need help getting through it, there's nothing wrong with getting help for it. I mean, I feel like people are afraid to admit that they're struggling mentally with things, because we can all tell when people are struggling maybe physically with things, but mentally is a completely different story. Mm-hmm. And it is okay to get help. It's okay to just talk about it. It's okay.
Yeah, that is the one thing, you know, if you don't feel, the one nice thing is that there are so many mental health, you know, professionals out there now, and especially like the online, you know, now we're getting more and more into, you know, people, mental health professionals will start being able to be certified nationally, so that for things like, you know, counselors that are out of state, that they don't have to, you know, you don't have to get a counselor to do a Skype or phone therapy session or something like that, that we are getting to that point finally where you can just, and that is one of the things, is that if you don't have someone like that in your life, because let's be honest, there's a lot of people out there in such a disconnected society as ours is nowadays. I mean, we're still very connected on some levels. I mean, there's still, you know, it's like, there's still tons of places where people, you know, there's still churches and friend groups and close family. But if you're one of the people that isn't like that, and it seems like there's more and more people like that these days, who don't have kind of a core group, family group, you know, church group, whatever, that there are, you know, professionals that you can pay to, you know, go and they will actually sit there and help. And I, you know, like, I'm sure you've been through it. I've been through years of therapy for stuff. So it's, you know, you're just listening to a crazy person and a sane person. So we kind of balance each other out. I'm the crazy person. Let's just make that clear. No. I should have left that. I should have left that up in the air for them to decide who is. It would have been, we would have stay for the clincher at the very end. So, but well, Kim, this has been really good. I hope you feel good about it. And
I do. I think it's been a good conversation. I was pretty nervous about it, but I'm thankful to you for allowing us to go here today. And I think it was a good topic and good discussion.
So. Yeah. Apologies for the dog barking in the very beginning, but you know, we live in the real world here, listeners. We live in the real world. So, all right. Well, Kim, where can everybody find you now that you're kind of back a little? I mean, you're still dealing with stuff, but you're kind of back into the swing of things.
Yeah, back in the swing of things. You can find me on Twitter at Southern Keeks, KEEKS. You can find me at Washington Examiner and then at Arc Digital.
All right. And you can find me at Andrea and Ruth on Twitter. And you can subscribe to the Arc Digital newsletter. I curate that about once a week, depending on, or twice a week if there's a lot of content going up. And you can also find me on the Fifth Estate podcast. So we will see you next time on another episode of The Right Side. Bye.